Welcome into the 5 o'clock hour of this Monday edition of News on the Hill. I am Brighton McConnell, glad to be back on the air, and we are beginning to hit the afternoon and early evening stride today. You're going to want to stick around because later on in this hour, we'll be re-listening to our Mondays with Mac segment. Our own Aaron Keck chatted with the UNC football head coach Mac Brown earlier today about their victory over Virginia and upcoming game against Georgia Tech. We begin, though, with, of course, local news, and we start with COVID-19 data news. North Carolina reporting its hospitalizations due to the virus have been slowly decreasing over the last week, but we know that the spread is still elevated due to the Delta variant. And because of that, UNC Health and Duke Health each implemented a vaccine requirement a couple months ago for their employees to get vaccinated against COVID-19 or to submit medical and religious exemptions. The deadline for that requirement is set for tomorrow, and according to UNC Health today, nearly 95% of employees in their Triangle area locations have indeed shared their status or have been granted medical or religious exemptions. UNC today said that those who are not compliant by tomorrow will enter a probationary period for them to get vaccinated, which will end November 2nd, at that time which they could be terminated if they are not complying then. Now, Duke Health issued their own statement to Chapelboro today saying that they've got nearly 97% of their employees reporting that they are indeed fully vaccinated against COVID-19 or exempted. The employees who are not among that group by tomorrow at 10 a.m. will indeed face administrative action that could advance to removal and them not being retained to Duke Health staff. Now, UNC Health spokesperson Alan Wolf today shared a statement saying, quote, "We believe that requiring vaccines is in the best interest of public health and is essential for the safety of our patients, teammates, and communities. This vaccine requirement is designed to provide a critical layer of protection for everyone." Meanwhile, we're continuing to hear discussions in higher ed communities about COVID-19 vaccine mandates. We know that that is not in place at UNC, but they do continue to share COVID-19 data on their Carolina Together website. UNC's latest batch of COVID-19 cases has indeed pushed their mark of positive cases since August 1st past 700, but last week they reported around 50 new cases among the campus community. Also happening today, UNC reporting that there is a power outage going on this afternoon. Media relations saying the cause appears to be a line hit by an outside crew working on site today. There's currently no timeline for repairs of the outage on campus, and buildings affected include the Student Affairs Building, Lenore Dining Hall, South Building, Greenlaw, Mitchell, and Wilson. Several students and people in the campus community reporting this outage and saying that things are a little hectic on campus because of that, but the good news is not all buildings have lost power. Just again, at the moment, UNC not able to share a timeline on when it will be restored in those places. Turning to local government news, the Chatham County Board of Commissioners is holding its monthly business meeting tonight in Pittsboro. Among the agenda items for the commissioners, they're going to be voting on a resolution to apologize for any local or elected official's role in the lynching of Eugene Daniel, a black teenager killed in the 1920s by a white mob in Pittsboro. Sunday actually marked the 100th anniversary of Daniel's murder, so we will see what that resolution looks like. And again, whether the board will pass it tonight. The town of Chapel Hill now recently hosted a community information meeting about the Booker Creek watershed. That led to some intense discussions with the public that's since caused the town to pause the plans it had prepared. 97.9 The Hill's Ben Rappaport has the details.
245 people attended a stormwater meeting last week to discuss their concerns about the Booker Creek proposed floodwater storage projects. In 2017, the engineering firm W.K. Dixon conducted a study of the lower Booker Creek to come up with methods to mitigate stormwater quantity, flooding issues, and protect natural stream corridors. Findings from the study were presented to the Chapel Hill Town Council in May of this year. The study recommends the construction of 6 stormwater basins to reduce peak stormwater flows. These plans, however, were put on pause after a flurry of community members like Edward Marshall expressed their frustrations to the town.
I want to thank you for this great opportunity to share with you our concerns about a very critical issue facing the town of Chapel Hill, and that is, which direction are we going to be going? gray, or green.
Marshall is the leader of the Booker Creek Neighborhoods Preservation Alliance. The group is requesting to remove the stormwater basins from the town's plans and create an independent green infrastructure task force. Marshall said he was stunned by the town's plans because it called for the removal of 70% of the existing trees in the watershed. He said he believes there were multiple flaws with the study from W.K. Dixon.
What's missing is an environmental impact analysis. And at the end of the day, all of this deforestation, we believe, would not result in the reduction of stormwater flows. In fact, it could increase it because the trees are all, our forests are already stormwater basins.
Members of the Alliance believe cutting down trees in Booker Creek will lead to an increased heat index because the shade and the soil from the trees cool the area. John Morris, another member of the Alliance, said he believes the town chose an impractical solution.
These storage projects are the most costly and the most environmentally damaging of all the projects recommended by the study. They call for chainsaws and bulldozers to be ripping up our natural stream corridors to build the projects.
In response to widespread community concerns over Chapel Hill's plan for Booker Creek, town officials decided to change its original outline for the land. The program manager at W.K. Dixon, Tom Murray, said community input is helpful in creating the best outcomes for stormwater mitigation.
We're going to convene a stormwater work group with a variety of people to start to look at the Booker Creek sub-watershed study and what some potential alternative solutions may be. Again, I think for an area like this that's so developed, it's going to take a suite of solutions to address the many issues we're facing with stormwater management.
The work group will consist of experts, community members, and town staff to create better outcomes for addressing flooding and stormwater issues in Chapel Hill. Mayor Pam Heminger said convening a work group will help institute best practices from nearby cities like Durham and ideas from the Booker Creek Neighborhoods Preservation Alliance.
I see it as a win-win because we're going to pull best information and look at it from an environmental perspective, from a cost-benefit perspective. But at the end of the day, the real goal is to reduce that flooding. And so that's what we're going to go for.
The town council will provide a public work session on October 20th for staff to provide an update of the sub-watershed studies and discuss next steps for the future of Booker Creek. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Ben Rappaport.
Some other Chapel Hill news to wrap up the segment here. The public library announced today plans for a new space dedicated to exploring and sharing the town's history. It's called the Community History Lab, and it's going to house a variety of resources open to the public to better study that. It's set to fully launch once the library returns to full normal operations and being fully open to the public after the COVID-19 pandemic. Also news from UNC campus, just heard that the power outage has indeed ended. Faculty operation, or I should say Division of Finance and Operations for UNC reporting that power has now been restored to all impacted campus buildings, which is great news. Also great news, UNC's Campus Y has a new director, Yalitza Ramos, who was an undergrad student at UNC for many years, now is the head of the Campus Y, known for activism and being a safe spot on UNC's campus for many student leaders. And time now to look back on a busy weekend in Tar Heel sports. Let's start with the action yesterday. The UNC men's golf team continued a great start to the season, turning in performances on Sunday good enough to earn first place at an invitational at Olympia Fields in Illinois. Carolina's Austin Greaser won first place outright, but the Tar Heels also had two other players finish in the top 10 to help them earn the win. And it's the first time the UNC program has won back-to-back tournaments since 2014 and 2015. Starting out with two overall victories, and it helps really strengthen their position in the current top 10 across polls in the country. Also yesterday, UNC field hockey earned a win during their home opener of the season. They beat Miami University from Ohio 7-2 at Karen Shelton Stadium to get them to bounce back. Hopefully they will also stay in the top 10 of the latest polls. Now, Sunday wasn't all good news for Carolina programs as the men's soccer team fell to Duke in a top 25 matchup. The Blue Devils won 3-0, earning a win just 2 days after the women's team also beat Carolina. Tough beat there. Now, on Saturday, UNC Volleyball continued their incredible start to the season. They are now 11-0 after beating Davidson Saturday. They have been so good so far, and as head coach Joe Segula continues some great work with a good blend of young players and transfers. And of course, good news on the football front. UNC had a high-powered matchup against Virginia, where the Tar Heels broke a four-game losing streak to the Cavaliers. 97.9 The Hill's Michael Coe has more on how Carolina ended up with a win and now a 2-1 record on the season.
395 total yards, just four penalties, and 24 points on the board. Sounds like a positive first half, right? Not on Saturday night. The number 21 Tar Heels entered the locker rooms down 28-24 to the visiting Virginia Cavaliers, having coughed up a 24-7 first half lead with some unconscionable errors. Quarterback Sam Howell, whose hot start had powered the early Carolina lead, threw an interception in the end zone, which was returned 66 yards by the Cavaliers and set up a Virginia touchdown to cut the lead to 24-21. On Carolina's next drive with 1:53 remaining in the half, Grayson Atkins missed a 54-yard field goal, giving the Cavaliers positive field position. After seemingly being in control the entire first half, UNC had seen its lead slip away. Head coach Mack Brown said the environment on the sideline was very concerning.
We took a blowout and turned it back into a deficit, and we did it quickly. It was disappointing, and I saw our body language change on the sideline. I saw our heads get down. So we had to pick back up at halftime and start over.
But just like in week two against Georgia State, the Tar Heels attacked the second half with a vengeance. A 60-yard run from Ty Chandler set up a 5-yard touchdown pass from Howell to tight end Garrett Walston. It was Howell's fourth on the night. Carolina had the lead back almost as quickly as they lost it. The defense, tormented by Armstrong all first half, finally stopped the red-hot quarterback on Virginia's next drive. Receiver Josh Downs, who caught a pair of touchdown passes in the first half, returned the Cavalier punt 39 yards to set up yet another Carolina touchdown drive. This one was capped off by freshman running back Caleb Hood's first ever score in a Tar Heel uniform. Two more rapid touchdown drives of 3 minutes and 17 seconds and 3 minutes and 20 seconds respectively ballooned the formerly slim Carolina advantage to a game-high 21 points. A Ty Chandler rush and a pass from Howell to Kamari Morales, Howell's fifth on the night, did the damage. After another score from Chandler, Carolina ended the second half with 5 touchdowns in 5 possessions. The Cavaliers had no answer, and the Tar Heels won going away 59-39. Chandler's 198 yards on the ground are more than his first two games combined and represented a callback to the powerful running attack of 2020. Senior offensive lineman Marcus McKeithen said he could tell Chandler was locked in before the game.
Today, I definitely saw a different side of Ty. He seemed like he seemed more juiced and energetic than ever before, so I'm excited to see it.
Brown had a theory as to the running game's improved performance.
With Ty and the offensive line, I think they got probably tired of hearing that they weren't tough, and they got tired of hearing they weren't good. They did a great job protecting Sam tonight as well as running the football.
More important for Tar Heel fans than any stat, though, is this. It's the first Carolina victory over Virginia in football since 2016. Up next, Carolina will travel down Interstate 85 to Atlanta to take on Georgia Tech for the first time since 2019. The Yellow Jackets put an all-time scare into Clemson on Saturday and will be chomping at the bit for another shot at a ranked team. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Michael Coe.
You heard Michael say their ranked team, UNC, staying at number 21 in the latest AP poll this week. Although four of their players did earn conference awards for that big win over Virginia. Quarterback Sam Howell, running back Ty Chandler, wide receiver Josh Downs, and offensive lineman Marcus McKeithen were all named the ACC Team of the Week this afternoon at their positions. Also, UNC football news, Game Time announced for their game against Duke on October 2nd. That one's going to be a noon kickoff, their first in that time slot this season. Chapel Hill and UNC announced a company called BioLabs is set to operate in the office space being constructed along East Rosemary Street in the coming years. BioLabs, one of the first companies brought in by the University and Towns partnership that just launched earlier this summer to try and create some research innovation spaces and jobs in downtown to help both the university and Chapel Hill in general. Also in northern Orange County, the county government has gotten a new proposal for an industrial park. It is proposed for the same area of land where the Bucky's gas station proposal got rejected in the last few months. More details about that project on the county government's website, but this new proposal will see its first review by a county government committee later on in October. Now, those companies could potentially bring a variety of new jobs to Orange County, which is crucial as the pandemic continues to increase the rate of homelessness in our area. And with the federal eviction moratorium ending on October 3rd, we could see those numbers rise even more. 97.9 The Hill's Ava Pukach has this report.
Rachel Waltz, the Orange County Homeless Programs Coordinator, said the increase in the number of people living sheltered and unsheltered in Orange County was alarming. She said in January, the number was 176, a 40% increase from the previous year.
We expect that these numbers will continue to rise, as homelessness is typically seen as a lagging indicator during economic downturns because folks will do anything and everything they can to stay in their house.
While the COVID-19 pandemic did impact the number of those in the homeless system, it's not the only cause. Waltz said people in Orange County have difficulty accessing shelter due to a variety of factors.
There is no same-night shelter in Orange County. They have to operate off of a transitional housing model. Additionally, we know that there is not enough rapid rehousing, which is an evidence-based program that pairs financial assistance with short-term case management for folks who are experiencing homelessness.
Another gap in reducing the number of people who are housing insecure, according to Waltz, is not having enough permanent supportive housing. This is housing targeted toward folks experiencing chronic homelessness, people who have been homeless more than a year or four times over the past 3 years. She said chronic homelessness also increased this past year.
So we're having more folks entering the homeless system. When they do enter the homeless system, they are they're remaining homeless for much longer.
Corey Root, the director of Orange County Housing and Community Development, said these gaps in the homeless system have been around for a while.
COVID really just exacerbated them, and really exacerbated them for the most vulnerable folks of the most vulnerable, right? And so that's what we're really seeing, and that's what's really alarming and what we're really incredibly concerned about.
Root said the number of housing insecure people will not go down until barriers to accessible housing are knocked down.
We need to have more short-term programs and rental assistance. We also just need units for folks to move into.
According to Root, there are more than 160 Orange County households connected to service providers looking for permanent housing. While many are ready to pay, Root said there just isn't enough units available. To learn more about Orange County housing, visit chapelborough.com. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Ava Pukach.